Welcome to the Are Your Hands Full podcast, a step-by-step parenting podcast for your Jewish family. My name is Dr. S. Yaroslavitz, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Please check out the most recent Are Your Hands Full download at www.handsfullchinuch.com. That's handsfullchinuch.com. Welcome to Lecture 5. I hope everyone has been enjoying the previous lectures on this series. For those who are just tuning in now, here's a brief history of our lecture titles up until now. Lecture 1 was entitled Introduction. Lecture 2 was entitled The Right Way Down a One-Way Street. Lecture 3 was titled Our Special Children Living in Our World. The title of Lecture 4 was INB and SWC. And now the title of this lecture will be Our Adolescence. So this week, our caller asked the following question. She said, I have a high-functioning daughter with special needs who is a teenager. How do I handle her? So the obvious answer depends very much on the level of function, the general diagnosis, and interestingly enough, how much of the typical adolescent profile affects your teenager with special needs. I find it fascinating that because the adolescent profile is largely hormone related, there doesn't seem to be a correlation between diagnosis and how teenagerish your teen will be. This is because the adolescent profile is not really related to ability, but rather to hormone impact. So you could get a teen whose function is quite low, but yet the personality of the typical teen can emerge in all of its glory. Or you could get a teen who is high functioning and either presents with all the symptoms of a teenager or not. So for starters, I think it makes sense to define the typical teenage profile so that we can all get an idea of what we're looking at. In this way, you will know which of your teen's behaviors are normal for the age and which are not. And regardless of whether the signs and symptoms that your teen is exhibiting are normal or not, at some point, if you call in to ask a specific behavioral question about your teen, I will do my best to guide you on what to think and how to handle those behaviors. But for now, let's discuss the normal teenage profile. Here we go. What is adolescence? Adolescence is the period of time during which a young person develops from a child into an adult. Adolescents who are developing typically exhibit a somewhat predictable set of behaviors and follow a specific physical, emotional, neurobiological, and cognitive trajectory. And the most phenomenal description that I have ever found, this is not a definition, it's a description. The most phenomenal description that I have ever found in the literature about teens was written in 1986 by Judith Mishna in a book called Clinical Work with Adolescents. Listen to this brilliant description. She writes like this. I take it that it is normal for an adolescent to behave for a considerable length of time in an inconsistent and unpredictable manner, to fight his impulses and to accept them, to ward them off successfully and to be overrun by them, to love his parents and to hate them, to revolt against them and to be dependent on them, to be deeply ashamed to acknowledge his mother before others and, unexpectedly, to desire heart-to-heart talks with her, to thrive on imitation of and identification with others while searching unceasingly for his own identity, to be more idealistic, artistic, and generous and unselfish than he will ever be again, but also the opposite, self-centered, egotistic, and calculating. Such fluctuations between extreme opposites would be deemed highly abnormal at any other time of life. Isn't that great? Doesn't that say it as it is? But during this stage, these fluctuations between extreme opposites are perfectly normal. And based on this description and other research, I got my wonderful daughter-in-law, who helped me compile my initial books, Are Your Hands Full?, for children and adolescents who are developing typically, to write me a poem that describes teens to the T. Here is the poem. I thought you might enjoy it just for some comic relief. It goes like this. I'm not sure how or why or when, but life seems out of sorts again. In place of all that used to be, there's lots of instability. My words mean less. My grip is weak. What's happened to my smooth technique? At home, I used to call the shots. A yes was yes. A no was not. But now the lines have faded gray. I never know quite what to say. They come with answers that deny their obligation to comply. And then they fly into a rage when we are not on the same page. What's going on? What should I do? What is this that they're going through? And then it's just the daily stuff that's also getting really rough. Each morning's filled with pleas, rebuttals, wake-up calls, and unplanned shuttles. And all they'll eat is pancake mix with ice cream cake and chocolate chips. Their bedtime's never quite right now, since they're not tired anyhow. The bags, the jewels, the hair, the dress, the noise, the fights, the moods, the mess. Their styles change. Old clothes look strange. More shopping time must be arranged. At times they seem so sound and wise. They truly catch me by surprise. But then they'll melt and kick and scream, as if they're 2, not 17. Logic used to play a role in basic household protocol, but now that's simply history. Instead, all's just a mystery. I used to think I had a grip, but now my hold's begun to slip. Isn't that great? So now let's try to understand why all of this happens. In my book, Are Your Hands Full? Volume 2, we define this area of development as the hard hat area. In order to better understand adolescent development, it's best to compare an adolescent's brain to a construction project. Before construction begins, all building structures appear familiar and usual to the person who's passing by. Obviously, new construction can't take place while this normalcy continues to exist, right? Demolition crews must come along and dismantle and destroy and remove existing structures to clear the area for a new project. So when the demolition crew completes its job, the construction site appears horrible, more unsightly than it looked before the construction began. And a simple-minded passerby might even wonder, what are they doing here? Why did demolishers destroy what seems to have been a solid functional structure? Months later, however, it becomes clear that dismantling the old structure wasn't a mistake, but rather an essential step in the building of a brand new, much larger, much more sophisticated construction in its place, right? So it's the same thing. Adolescent brains undergo a similar process. Before the start of adolescence, children generally, if you've raised them right, behave according to the chinuch principles that they've been taught, and their actions and their reactions have basically been predictable. Then along comes adolescence, and all this begins to change. The internal body clock that a child has signals the beginning of this demolition and reconstruction process of the brain. And what happens? It dismantles all that was previously in place to make room for a much more sophisticated and refined product in your child's brain. Now, this demolition process might be painful to watch, because it almost looks as if all the hashkafas and skills that you worked so hard to teach and were assimilated by your child, all of a sudden they seem to have been forgotten. Please remember that what you are seeing is merely the behavioral manifestation of some serious neurological construction that's taking place in the brain of your child. and that when that construction is finally going to be done, your child will emerge more polished and more put together. So it's very possible that your teen will act as a teenager, even if he or she is behind developmentally. I have found that sometimes parents even rejoice when they see these normal aspects of their children. Oh, wow, something's normal here. It helps them connect to the normal parts of their child's development. So here are some examples of this. Number one, neurobiological changes. One of the examples of a neurobiological adolescent change is that teenagers develop erratic sleep patterns, which is directly connected to physical growth and change. So, although brain communication and function are consistent throughout the day, there are some brain functions that can only take place during sleep. One of those functions is cell multiplication and growth, which all children go through during adolescence. In particular, growth hormone that prompts bone cells to multiply only gets secreted during a specific stage of sleep known as rapid eye movement, REM, stage of sleep, which is the deepest of all the sleep stages. Therefore, in order to grow, adolescents need sleep. Typically, the adolescent brain signals exhaustion several times a day, telling the adolescent to go to sleep in order for the next dose of growth hormone to be secreted. So the adolescent brain demands frequent short naps, each of which includes an REM cycle, so that maximum growth can be achieved. So what should you expect? Know that your adolescent's need for sleep is legitimate. It's a physical one, and it should never be perceived as a negative behavior. Sometimes it's exasperating. Sometimes it messes up your teen's schedule. And even though it could be so frustrating, erratic sleep is precisely what enables teens to access extra REM cycles, which promotes their physical growth. Physical growth in adolescent boys will include, these are the changes that you might see, height, weight, development of muscle mass, deepening of vocal pitch, and hair growth. What will you see in an adolescent girl? You'll see increased height and weight, change of physique, hair growth, and the onset of cycles. It is crucial to monitor your teenager's physical health and development while these changes are taking place. Regular checkups at the pediatrician are extremely important, which I'm sure everybody's doing, and it should include a full physical exam, blood work, blood pressure, height, weight, and screening for eating disorders and curvatures of the spine. Okay, so this is the first thing that you will be noticing and you should be looking for. Number two, emotional changes. So in the brain, there's an amygdala and a hippocampus. These are two structures in the brain's limbic system. The limbic system is the brain's emotional center, whose interaction produces our various levels of memory. This is very interesting. The amygdala interprets and regulates emotion based on events that occur in the environment, and sends that emotional information to the hippocampus. If the emotional information is intense, the hippocampus will register a far more vivid memory than if the emotional level attached to the event is minimal. And you're thinking, what is she talking about? So let me give you an example. We will probably not remember what we ate for lunch last Wednesday. The only way we'll remember what we ate for lunch last Wednesday is if that lunch was attached to a specific emotional event, such as a celebration or chas v'shalom, the opposite. So the adult limbic system, which is the emotional center of the brain, and the prefrontal cortex, which is the logical thinking center of the brain, work together with a system of checks and balances, thereby filling the role of establishing our moods and establishing appropriate reactions based on what's going on at that particular time. And believe it or not, it's very strongly linked to memory, because you remember things that are more significant with greater detail than things that are not more significant. So that makes sense. Now, when this emotional information is processed in the amygdala and it's sent directly to the prefrontal cortex, the job of the prefrontal cortex is to override any impulsive and instinctive reactions that the amygdala might have planned. So the prefrontal cortex is supposed to stop the amygdala from becoming too intense and too emotional. And this would introduce the concept of logic to the teenage thinking. But here's the problem. The amygdala develops first, and the prefrontal cortex develops later. So there will be a period of time where your teenager will be like a car with the gas working, but the brake is not developing yet. So you might have intense and overly emotional reactions from a teen simply because they don't know how to apply the brakes. And you'll have this with sad things and happy things. Not necessarily is it only when they're upset. Even when they react more happily, they react more intensely. So here's what you would expect. Because the underdeveloped prefrontal cortex leaves the amygdala no choice but to respond to the events in the environment with emotion and instinct rather than with logic and foresight, the adolescent tends to be much more sensitive, much more moody, much more volatile and impulsive, because their interpretation of what's going on in the environment, their interpretation of other people's actions and words, is based on pure emotion without the benefit of rational thinking. This changes. They outgrow this. But while you're going through it, it could be a little difficult. And also, since it is the amygdala's job to ready the body for action when perceiving stress, adolescents often become very overwhelmed, very stressed out, with minimal cause, with minimal provocation. Besides that, there's adolescent hormones going on. This is another cause for adolescent moodiness and emotional sensitivity. What are hormones? We use the word so much we don't even know what they are. Hormones are messenger chemicals. That's what they are. They're messengers that travel around through the bloodstream, and they're used to communicate with organs that need to do whatever they need to do. And thereby, when they communicate with these organs and tell the organs what to do, various body functions and behaviors happen. So during adolescence, new hormones are introduced into the adolescent bloodstream at a significantly higher rate than previously in order to cause all of the physical changes we spoke about. So when there's a combination of new and existing hormones running through the bloodstream, this can also change a teenager's reactions. So here we go. Number three, hormonal changes. Even though this lecture is not about adolescent hormones, because the study of adolescent hormones is very complex, be aware that all teenagers are justifiably moody and will cry frequently or be unable to explain to you why they feel agitated. Realize that both teenagers who are developing typically and teenagers with disabilities experience a bunch of simultaneous changes, and that teenage moodiness is simply a secondary symptom of these changes. It's not necessarily a distinct and separate problem in and of itself. Here comes number four. Hashem created us with an internal biological clock that dictates both time-related physical changes in our bodies, right, and emotional changes in our brains. There is a mandate that pulls a child away from parents. This mandate dictates a separation from everything associated with childhood. And it occurs somewhere between the ages of 9 and 10. And it signals the onset, the beginning of the transition from childhood into emerging adulthood. So here's something that you need to understand. And what would you expect from this separation from parents that occurs through what we call the adolescent mandate? So in order to get this, the first thing you have to understand is that one of the most central aspects of childhood is dependence on parents. So when responding to the biological adolescent mandate, it's coming through their neurological systems, adolescents turn sharply and painfully away from parents in order to progress toward the independence that's associated with adulthood. You should know that even though a teen is developing with special needs, and they might not attain the same level of independence as their normally developing counterparts do, they might still exhibit the adolescent mandate and attempt to separate from parents just the same. So your teenager with special needs might still tell you, "Leave me alone. I don't need you anymore. Don't tell me what to do," regardless of the level of independence that they may or may not attain. Number 5. Social and emotional separation of genders. This is something else that's important to pay attention to. Have you ever wondered why little boys play with cars and trains and little girls enjoy dolls? Believe it or not, this aspect of gender separation originates in the earliest development of a child, when the baby's brain structures are being organized. Another growth surge that helps differentiate the male brain from the female brain takes place at 3 months of age. And yet a third one takes place now during adolescence. The actual structural differences in the brain that distinguish the male from the female are located in the hippocampus, which is responsible for emotions, long-term memory, and spatial navigation. This is very interesting. These structural differences are a result of a combination of hormones and the actual development of brain cells during these stages of life, and therefore determine the behaviors of a child or an adolescent and how that behavior matches their gender, regardless of level of ability. So you're going to have a child with special needs who's a girl playing with dolls and a child with special needs who's a boy playing with cars, regardless of their level of ability. So this is what you would expect as they move into adolescence. Boys and girls develop similarly, pretty much so, except for their preferences, until the onset of adolescence. They both are basically equally skilled in social, cognitive, motor skills. They display similar reactions to the events in the environment, right? But as children become adolescents, their social, their cognitive, their motor skills separate. They become more diverse. And in addition, emotional expression and reactions change. And they can be classified as typically male or female. Let me give you some examples of this. During the early part of adolescence, girls will mature faster cognitively than boys. So that means that an adolescent girl might even appear smarter and more developed than a boy of the same age, regardless of whether they're developing normally or not. Boys, on the other hand, once again, regardless of whether they're developing normally or not, will often continue to develop motor skills necessary for physical activity. So they're going to be heavily into sports or heavily into running around. And they can become very physical when they have episodes with their siblings, when they get into fights, while girls will become highly verbal, yell, scream, ma, during these negative moments. And that involves often a tone of voice that escalates to unacceptable levels. And you also might find that even a daughter with special needs may become very conscious of her appearance, which is perfectly normal teenage behavior on all accounts. So these are a couple of examples of how some of these behaviors are very gender specific. Okay, so now that we've outlined some of the normal adolescent changes that have no link or connection to the developmental level of your teen, you might begin to notice some of these profile changes. If you do not despair. These profile changes are linked to this specific age group and are therefore temporary. Regardless of whether these profile changes occur in a teen who is developing normally or in a teen with special needs, the fact that these changes are profile in nature and are linked to an age tells us that they will pass. Now you might be thinking, that's really very nice. I'm glad this will pass. But what do I do now? How do I handle this now? The best way to obtain an answer to this what do I do now question from me is to call into the Nishmas Sinai hotline with a specific question about a particular teen. Try to include as much information as possible. The age, the diagnosis, the particular behavior, etc. I'll answer to the best of my ability with Siyata Dishmaya. Also, Don't be afraid to plug in some of these teen behaviors into lesson 4, INB and SWC. Ask yourself the ignorable question about the particular behavior that you are observing. Ask yourself, is this behavior ignorable? So she said something chutzpahdik. Can I ignore it? If you can ignore it, then it's INB, ignore negative behaviors. If it is not, then try to use SWC, separate without comment, to remove another child that's being bothered or an object if you can manage it. Do not attempt SWC if you think your teen is physically too big or too strong for it. If this is the case, don't attempt SWC to begin with. INB when you can, and send me individual questions so that I can guide you further. Have a great week and listening to my podcast. My name is Dr. S. Yaroslavitz, and I am the director of Hands Full, which is committed to the provision of community education in the area of behavior management and cognitive development of children. I look forward to hearing from you with any questions that you have. And remember, no matter how impossible things may seem, the Earth will continue rotating on its axis.